A lot of people have been asking about black holes and on and on and on and all of these conspiracy theories. Let's look at this. Noah says, what else can you think about? Black hole, Bermuda Triangle. And then Deji says, huh, just like the movie Lost. That's what people are saying. I know it's preposterous, but is it preposterous, you think, Mary?
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America Live?
I want to check in now. It's in his Martin Savage. At this moment, he is in a 777 flight simulator along with instructor Mitchell Casado. He is answering a question about zombie flight from Eckstein, who asked if zombie plane theory is true.
Because we left with 7 hours of fuel.
Right.
And this plane is so sophisticated, it flies and flies and flies until it runs out of fuel. That's the zombie theory.
You say the sign-off from the co-pilot, he said, all right, good night, that it still doesn't sit right with you. Why?
All right, good night is either way too casual, not compliant, or maybe it's a coded message.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Tonight is a very weird evening altogether. We already started out with hijinks here on the intro music, and I'm tremendously under the weather, but somehow after a little visit to the porcelain god 45 minutes ago, I've bounced back, so I'm hoping it'll hold for the next couple of hours, because I suddenly have a lot of energy after expelling my day's worth of whatever I could keep down. Nonetheless, see, I told you, Rogan, you got to be honest with the people. You got to let them know what's really going on behind the scenes. So I'm trying to hold on. This may end up turning into a zombie show, much like the Malaysian
Airlines.
Are
you pregnant?
No, I don't think so. I may just slump over, and then you guys are going to have to host the show for a while, and they'll be like, when did the show end? And they'll be like, somewhere off the coast of Australia. Anyway, my guests tonight are good friends of the program. It's way overdue since they were on the show. They've had me on their show. And they're longtime listeners to Banal of America, and they're producing something that's fantastic. It, too, much like this program, has no commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and I guess no comparison as well. It's really quite the eclectic offerings from these guys. It's really, as I said here on the thing, exceptionally eclectic, esoteric podcast, and that really sums it up pretty well.
Wow,
Project Archivist is the name of the program, and the two guys who run the show are Rogan Razorwire and Lobo Matthias. There you go, Lobo. I got it right. So welcome to the show. It's 11 o'clock at night. I'm probably going to start hallucinating soon just from the sheer lack of water or anything in my system. So it's going to be a very entertaining couple hours, guys, I think. So strap on in. And welcome to the show. Now you talk.
Thanks.
This is where the show starts.
Great.
Cool. Well, we're here.
Thanks for the intro, Tim.
So, yeah.
I've already flustered him, Robbie. Don't worry about that. Robbie's asking if we can fluster these guys. So let's start out with the bio, the background. I presume you guys flipped a coin before we started the program as to who would start.
No.
So
no.
No?
No, Roe always starts.
Well,
you want me to handle it this time?
We'll start with Roe. Let's hear the origin stories of... let's hear the origin stories of Rogan Razorwire. How did this all come together? And Project Archivist, of course. Don't tell us Lobo's story. We'll have them kind of come together like a, you know, like a TV movie.
My story.
Yes.
All right, well.
How'd you get interested in all this? What led you to want to do a podcast?
I listen to a whole lot of different podcasts. I listen to you. I listen to Mysterious Universe. I listen to the guys over there on Nightmare. I listened to the 13 Skulls, all of these different shows. When I first discovered podcasting, I up until that point, you really only had Coast to Coast to listen to. And then I discovered the world of podcasting. I found all these shows, and I was like, wow, this is cool. This is a great way to get esoteric information. And I just started listening to them on and on and on. And then I got to know the host of the 13 Skulls podcast, and he was always, you know, it's when you're running a podcast, you're busy, and it's hard to find content. So I started contributing to his show behind the scenes way, way, way back. I used to contribute to Mysterious Universe behind the scenes there. But then I started doing segments for TJ with 13 Skulls. I just started recording stuff so he would have less to worry about recording every week. And eventually he was more or less like, all right, you need to move off my couch and go out and do your own thing. And I said, well, I can't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then as synchronicity would have it, I eventually just kind of fell into place to get all the stuff going to do my own show. And I ran into Lobo, and, you know, we kind of just went from there.
All right, Lobo, now you fill in your side of this whole thing, and I'll decide.
There were unicorns involved. No.
That could be any story.
Involved. And norwals. Yeah, that's the scoop. It was norwals. There was nothing else involved other than that.
Yeah. Well, we met through the 13 Skulls on Facebook, and I guess I will tell this little bit of the story. Me and Lobo here used to go back and forth. We would have conversations. We would have disagreements, but they would be proper non-screaming disagreements. And then we got into a conversation about the Shroud of Turin, and it got very comfortably heated. It never got uncomfortable, but it turned into a big, long debate about the Shroud of Turin and religion and all that kind of stuff. And it ended really well. And then we appeared on another podcast together at the same time. We were fans of a mutual podcast, and they had a night, hey, why don't people call in if they want to call in and be on the show? So I said, all right, what the hell? And I called in, and then Lobo called in, and that was the first time we actually met on the air, because we don't live anywhere near each other. I live just south of Detroit, and he lives in Connecticut. And then,
yeah, you guys are pretty far away.
Things fell
pretty
into
amazing
place.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, this all came together.
We've only
like
met
that.
Each other in person one time for 5 minutes, and that was because of my old job just happened to take me through his neck of the woods. It was literally long
and
enough
you only
for
met
to say,
for
hello,
five
sir.
Minutes?
Something like that. Yeah, it was only about 5 or 10 minutes. I was.
Oh, Jesus, Lobo. You didn't even take the man out to lunch?
I couldn't. He had this crazy woman in the car with him.
True. Yeah.
He had to go back.
For a while, I was a test driver for one of the big three, and I had an engineer in the car with me. And my boss was like, yeah, you guys go ahead and go for the day. Drive where you want. You know, and I'm like, I'm going to go up and see this guy. You know, I've never met this guy in person ever, so I'm going to go see him. And we drove up there, and I got there, and I made some joke about Jehovah's Witnesses coming door to door. I was like, hi, how are you? Here's my house, blah, blah. Hi, here's my kids. Great, blah, blah. Lobo, can I use your bathroom? Yes, you can. All right, sweet, and we're gone. And that was it. And since then, it's been a battle to try to get back out there. So hopefully next year I'll be driving out there or visiting out there in town sometime. So, and that's how it all kind of fell together. I called him and said, I was trying to put together a show, and I didn't quite know what I wanted to do. And there was another buddy of mine. We had another friend of ours. It was from a podcast called Transmissions from the Bunker. And he was like, don't ever do this on your own. Don't ever do this on your own. Get a co-host, do something, or I'll grab you by the ears.
That man's a fool.
So I do it on my own. Yeah, it can be work though. It can be a burden to keep the conversation going sometimes. So,
I know.
And then I contacted Lobo and said, "Hey, this is what I want to do, but I don't want to quite do it like everybody else." And it all fell together really, really fast. I think within like 3 days we had the show hashed out, and then we recorded a trial run, and you know we said let's give it a go, and we're still going. So you know here we are.
And how long has this been?
Pretty much in the nutshell. 3 years now? Are we going on 3.5 years, I think?
I think it's 3.
Yeah, I think we're at about 3 years. How many shows?
June, a little over 100, right?
Yeah.
115, yeah. I believe. Well, it's actually more than that if you do our little side episodes, all the little junk we've done here and there. So, you know, we're probably at maybe, if you count everything, I think we're probably at 135, maybe. Who knows?
All right.
We've been going at it for all a while.
Nice, nice. All right, so it's 3 years. That's pretty amazing. It's remarkable that two people can come together like online like that and manage to work together. In my experience, that's miraculous. So kudos to you guys.
A lot of mutual respect for each other's opinion. Is the best shows we've ever done have never aired. They've just been conversations between the two of us. Like, God, I wish we recorded this. So, you know. But, you know, we've got boundaries and stuff like that. Everybody knows what they handle, and we've got our own expertises in different areas. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, it just works pretty well. So there's a lot of times where I'll call Lobo up, and I'll be like, I'm thinking of doing something stupid. There's the phone. I'll just call him out of the blue. I've got this idea, and I'm thinking I'm doing something stupid. And he'll usually respond with,
it's your quarter, spill it. What do you want to do? Let's go.
Exactly it. Yep. Yep, that's how it works. So the first episode we ever kicked around, I think, was we had listened to Linda Godfrey on your show, and we said, I want to talk to this woman, and I want to do this. And I think the whole series developed from the conversation of how we would interview Linda Godfrey.
Mm-hmm.
And it just went from there.
That was at work. It was. Yeah. You called me at about midnight, and we talked for about half an hour, 45 minutes, and that was the show started the next week.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we hit the ground running, you know.
Start my show. Yeah. Pretty good. Now, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, we don't have – one of the things that we do is we don't follow a set format. Like, we're not a solid interview show. We're not a solid news aggregator show. We're not a solid roundtable show. We'll do a couple of interviews, and then we'll just do shows or a ramblecast, or we just kind of – we decompress and have a good laugh, and we'll cover weird news stories and probably throw a little bit of science and stuff in there. And then we'll have roundtable shows where we just have people on to talk about topics. But we keep things going and different as much as possible to keep the dreaded boredom and, you know, factor setting in. And we try to mix it up a lot. We're not necessarily a paranormal show. We do cover paranormal, but we're not going to cover it unless we can cover things in a different way.
That's what I like.
I always kind of look at us
doing the same stuff.
Yeah, well, we got that from you, actually. That's one of the things that we inherited from listening to you over the years. We were like, hey, Tim covers all this weird stuff. We can do it, too. You know, there's no saying we have to cover this, this, and this. Your Amish episode was a fantastic episode. But we're kind of like we're kind of the Abbott and Costello of the esoteric world, I guess you'd say. That's a good put
it. There you go. I thought about using that for your image. But
that
would have
been
the Blues Brothers one better.
Yeah, the Blues Brothers image
is
great, though.
Robbie in the chat room, I had to slap him down, as I said in the chat here. I'm sick and grumpy tonight, so I'll suffer no fools this evening, my friends. But Robbie asked if he wants to know where the name Lobo came from. And then we'll turn it over to the chat later for questions. I'm seeing a lot of strange and unusual people in this chat that are reminiscent of your fans. So that's exciting.
Yeah, our kid looked up on that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll give a shout-out to Emmanuel Navarrete. And Sater, who I've never seen before
Sater,
in my life. But
Sater's the cat who was from – he's from Transmission from the Bunker. I can't praise the dude enough. He's one of my brothers.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, he's hanging around in the chat room too. So we'll turn it over to them in a little bit this evening as we get close to the end of the show. But I want to know, since it's kind of on topic here, where are the origins of Lobo?
Well, my My given night, my given name is Anthony, and I hate it. I've hated it my whole life. You know, and what goes along with that, of course, if you're an Anthony, everybody calls you Tony. About 20 years ago, I belonged to a group, and they decided that everybody had names. Everybody was given a name, and it was a spiritual group. And the name that was given to me was Firewolf. That's the name that I carried for the longest time. And because I'm Hispanic, they decided to start calling me Lobo. And I've been called Lobo ever since. My own family calls me Lobo. So when my wife tags me in things, she calls me Lobo. You know, I have aunts and uncles that call me that. So I mean, it's if anybody knows out there, I know Manny's in there and he's Mexican. If you're Hispanic, you're given a name. It's what you were. Nobody usually goes by their real name. Like my father's given
like
name is Cruz. Everybody calls him. Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Except they don't call him Dog, dude. I'm sure his name is like Randy, but they call him Dog.
Yeah, probably.
So.
Right?
Yeah.
What's your name? Reginald.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's
exactly
where it came from. I was part of a group of people. It was it was a spiritual group, and everybody had a given name. There was Aurora and Venus and Katrina and Ice, and we all had names.
Who was named Katrina?
My wife, actually.
Oh, boy. This is pre-Katrina storm.
I ended
up
marrying her. Yeah, this was way before the storm, although she is quite a big deal. So, but, yeah, that's where
Lobo
came from.
No matter how
I wouldn't,
under the weather I am.
She's not listening, so you can pretty much say whatever you want. She never would.
Now,
although she did
listen
to that part about me calling her Pinkie Pie, so.
I have no idea what you're referencing. So this is a family
just
show. Let's try and, my goodness.
Oh,
anyway,
wow.
Now, for the completists in the audience, Rogan, give us a little on the origins of that, because you guys do use these stage names, let's call them.
The Rogan name, the only reason I use a pseudonym is because I have family that's online. I have kids. My kids are online and stuff like that. And I had watched a lot of people over the years get beat up for their opinions and stuff that they post, et cetera. And I said, well, you know what? I don't get any problem with putting myself out there. If anybody listens to the show or anybody in Facebook, you know, all the people that listen to us, we're very accessible. We're not hard to get a hold of. We're very, I hate saying I'm there for my fans, but we're there for our listeners. And we're not hard people to get in touch with and interact with. And, you know, we're not rock stars. That's one of our rules is we're not rock stars. We try to be very accessible to everybody and be as cool as possible as long as they're cool with us. So I created the whole Rogan name because I tried to, years ago, create an Xbox Live account. I put in the name Jade Rodin, and something happened. There was a cable glitch or something, and it created the name Rogan. And I'm like, all right, well, I can't change it. And I just kind of stuck with that name, and that became my online presence for video games and World of Warcraft and all this different stuff. And it's just kind of becoming like this online nickname that I've got. And now everybody that knows me just kind of calls me Ro. It's just one of those things that stuck. So it's the only reason I created that whole name was for that very reason, to have some kind of anonymity. And I'm glad I did, because we've covered topics on the show before, and we've been on other shows, and we've had these kooky, wacky, born-again Christian people coming after us. And,
Yeah, you run into a lot of strange people.
And that's fine for that persona. I mean, I've got people that I know through the show that know my real name that I hang out with. I've made a lot of great friends through the show and stuff, and those people know who I really am, even though, ironically, they still don't call me by my real name. But and I'm glad I've done that, because I don't want somebody getting in touch with my wife on Facebook or my kids and bugging them for something that I do off to the side as a little project or something for fun or whatever, or just, you know, I like to keep them out of it. And 97% of the people out there understand and respect it and are very cool with it. So I've never run any kind of an issue with it. It's not because I'm trying to be spooky and mysterious and I've got this crazy mystical name. No, it's not that at all. It's just there so I have some form of anonymity, or if something happens with the show or whatever, I've got a way I can cut that persona and completely walk away from it. But I have had people contact me and say, hey, listen, you know, this is who you are. This is where you live. This is where you work. You know, I'm not going to do anything to you or whatever. And people have left me alone. So they're like, you're not as secure as you think you are. And I'm like, well, I know I'm not that secure. But,
well, who would do that?
You know?
You'd be surprised.
Jesus.
You'd be surprised. You know, I have not yet regretted ever coming up with this pseudonym to as a former professional.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I mean, they were cool. And I'm like, you know, it's not real hard. There's people out there that can find out where you are and stuff by what you post, pictures you post and your IP address. There's clever people out there, but, you know, they were cool about it. I never heard from them again, but they're like, just so you don't think you're indestructible. So, you know, but that's really the whole reason I do it. Plus, I've got some very religious in-laws, and I've got some very religious family members, and they wouldn't take to some of the stuff that we cover very, you know, they wouldn't take to it very well. You know, it's...
You know, I tell them to piss up a rope, so whatever.
Yeah, I can't quite do that, though. So, but that's the whole story behind it. There's nothing weird or anything to it or nothing. So,
sounds good.
That's one of our rules, is we're not rock stars. So,
believe me, I know you're not rock stars. I'm just teasing. I'm posting the link here for the chat room, because some of your followers there can't find it at some point. So we'll try and help them out.
Oh, the kids jumping on the bed on you?
Yeah. Someone's like, I just finally found it. I was like, Jesus, dude, it's not. I guess it's. I don't know. I have like a back door to get into it. But anyway, let's talk about the big missing flight thing, because I'm just captivated by this. I've been glued to the TV for the last week. I know you're thrilled to hear about it. I know Lobo is a big fan of missing planes. So.
Oh yeah.
I think it's amazing. I've been glued to the TV. I'm like doubly amazed by the story and the insane coverage of it all. I only watch CNN, so maybe they're the only ones like losing their minds over all this. But it's been great to watch. I don't know. And what I like about it too is that it seems like every moron has a theory, and at the same time, we don't know enough to discount anyone's theory. So it's like, the people that are like, it was stolen and taken to Pakistan. It's like, well, you're an idiot, sir. You're crazy, but we can't have any way of disproving your theory right now. So, and I call this hypothetical person
an idiot. As far as the theories go,
I'm more in
that
favor
one's
of
probably
that
the most realistic
theory.
Yeah.
What's
as far
that?
As theories go, that one's probably the most realistic theory out there, you know, compared to
know,
what the other ones are floating around.
Exactly.
You know, that one's, that's, of the theories,
I was being
facetious
by trashing them.
Yeah.
That guy, but I actually am more in favor of the stolen plane to Pakistan theory than some of the other ones. But it seems like those don't get any, they kind of exist in the undercurrent. CNN's not really touching. Part of me feels like, we'll just sort of jump in on this. Part of me feels like that the U.S. government had to have something to do with this, possibly. Or they definitely know where it is and just won't tell anybody, because even if it crashed in the ocean, they don't want to let anyone know that they track every airplane all the time. You know, then everyone would be like, why are you doing that? You know, so the U.S. government has to kind of play dumb on the whole thing. But I don't even know what to make of it. So let me start with, Rojan, you were kind of going off here. So let me start with you. Just give me your basic idea what the hell's going on with this story.
We don't know. We know that the flight recorders were turned off and all the little data things were turned off, and then it vanished and went off radar. Planes can crash into the ocean all the time, though I do find it a little weird that they haven't found any debris floating in the water or anything like that. I don't really pay a whole lot of attention to it because I don't like getting caught up. For one, I'm a huge freak about conspiracies. They just drive me nuts. So I'm not one of the Alex Jones crew.
Right.
It's the whole realm of let's create a conspiracy within minutes of anything happening drives me nuts. So I don't like to speculate too much on it. If there are any theories that I'll hold to, the only ones is either A, it crashed, or B, the idea that it could have been taken and took into another country is also that's not a bad one to throw on the table. Because I could see something like that happen if you've got a plane. Yeah. The idea that black holes, UFOs, zombie planes, you know, all that stuff doesn't hold any water with me. It doesn't, because we don't know anything. And news cycles love to embellish this stuff and run with it because it gets attention, which gets ratings, which sells advertising dollars and so forth. So, and then the conspiracy theory crowd will get anything and run with it. And like you, being from Boston, you took it on the nose when the Boston bombings happened, and you watched the whole conspiracy news cycle, everything go into full blast when the bombings happened in Boston. So,
exactly.
You know, you've got to, you know, I'm sure within a couple of days you were ready to rip people's faces off because you were just tired of seeing stuff. So I tend to avoid all this stuff, you know, but I do find it interesting, the whole the UFO, black hole, Holy Spirit, like no one knows anything, so everybody that's out there grabs onto it and tries to make it theirs to fit their agenda for whatever that means.
Yeah. I think when I was putting the clips together, though, I heard the black hole part again, and I feel bad for the guy because he was just reading some moron's Twitter question, and it was like, now everyone's like, oh, that guy on CNN thinks it's a black hole. It's like, no, he was just kind of, I mean, he was entertaining the moronic idea. He pretty much admitted that, but he, I don't think he really was like, hey, could it have been a black hole? So I feel kind of bad for him, but, you know, like you can hear it, folks. If you listen to the opening clip here, you can hear him. He's like, what is TJ Dinkelnuts on Twitter says? Could it be a black hole? Like, oh, dude, don't. Why are you even reading that? Well, that's part of the thing. By the end of the night on here, they run out of, they've gone over everything a million times. So, like, the final hour, they're like, let's turn to Twitter and see what people are asking. And it's just same questions all the time. So, I agree with you, Rojan. I think
it's keeping the hype generated.
Part of some combination. I think it might end up being a combination of the two, to be honest with you. Like the dude tried to hijack the plane, and the other guy fought him back, and then they accidentally killed each other and then turned into a zombie plane. Something like that. I wouldn't be surprised. But
yeah,
the whole going off course thing just doesn't really, from what I understand, they were like leaving Malaysia and they were on their way to Vietnam and they diverted from course and shut down all the stuff like in the one little stretch of air that's like no man's land between the two places. And it's like, if you're going to steal a plane, that's exactly where you do it. So it's like, if it was some catastrophic failure, it happened at a insanely perfect time for the plane to go missing. I mean, I guess things happen, and you know something, it could turn out that the odds say that it all came together that way, that like they were in the no man's land between air traffic controls, and that's when everything went haywire. But part of me feels like maybe there was some kind of nefarious something going on there. And then things went wrong for the guy.
It does have a nefarious feel to it. Because if you think about it, if somebody can get a hold of a jumbo jet, if you're a terrorist organization and you can get a hold of a jumbo jet, you could do a lot with it. You know, you could, going into speculation here, I'll say that up front, but you could use it
the whole
payload
story,
delivery system.
Let's just get that out of the way. I mean, the whole story is speculation. No one, you know, it's been 2 weeks of speculation. Everybody is speculating, so you don't have to apologize for speculating.
Yeah, so I mean, at this point, we don't know anything, and it could be anything. So, you know, but the idea of, you know, aliens and UFOs and all that stuff, it's amusing to look at, but I don't look at it with any real seriousness or anything like that.
I don't think anyone really does, honestly. I mean,
even
the people in the UFO scene. Well, I'm sure there are people that do, but the people in the UFO scene are even like, you know.
Yeah.
We're embarrassed by those people too, so. But Lobo, why don't you weigh in on on MH370? What are your thoughts on this big story?
Well, I mean, whenever anybody says that a plane just can't disappear, I still point back to Flight 19. And, you know, that was a bunch of planes, prop planes, but they were still planes, and they were going over, they were flying out of Florida, they were going to circle around and come back. And they ended up lost in the quote-unquote Bermuda Triangle, and they still haven't been able to find Flight 19. And that wasn't just one plane. And then there's ships that are lost every year. The Cyclops is still missing. That was a giant coal-carrying behemoth that just disappeared that was coming out of South America and supposed to be coming up this way. You know, so stuff does disappear. I don't want to say that it disappears under magical circumstances or paranormal or anything, but things, you know, large things do disappear. And things do happen, like in the perfect scenario. I think of what happened in the Edmund Fitzgerald up in the Great Lakes, and I think about what happened
excellent reference.
Well, you know, and I think about the movie The Perfect Storm that was based upon a fishing ship out in the Atlantic that hit that perfect giant killer wave, the rogue wave that everybody said didn't exist, that ended up swamping them and sinking them. Things do happen that are, you know, that, you know, it literally is the perfect storm. They could be, you know, like that particular airplane, you know, everybody's like, oh, the military has this great radar system. Yeah, they have a wonderful radar system. They still can't tell you what the plane is exactly. They can tell you that there's an object there. However, the radar that's used by air traffic control nowadays can tell you what it is because it goes along with the flight recorder. It goes along with all the instrumentation. It has an idea of what's in the air, and that's how they can track them. However, radar is only good up to a certain altitude. Once you go below that altitude, it's no longer viable because of hills and valleys and what have you that get in
the
way.
That they hugged the ground and flew away.
So, I mean, I could understand to a certain degree that, okay, something that large hitting the water should theoretically leave an oil streak. There should be something that is that's been left behind to show that this plane did sink. But again, you know, there's that saying, dead men tell no tales, and that has to do with the ocean. When some stuff just disappears into the ocean, and it's deep and it's vast, and even if you know where it fell, depending on what the there's different rifts in the water itself. There's paths of oceanic currents that move. So if it crashed and went into one particular, if it got caught in that slipstream, it could be pulled miles away from where it initially hit, and you'd never know where it was. So you could be looking in one area, and the actual wreckage should be 20 miles away, pulled by a slipstream in a current.
Yeah, well,
they spent the first week
like looking for it in the wrong place anyway. They were like looking all over near Malaysia, and then they were like, oh, wait, I think it's down by Australia. The whole thing is so – the other part of it is it just seems so poorly managed that
– Well, you
again,
got a bunch
I
of
say,
different countries
think,
involved.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I think the U.S. government probably were like, listen, we know it's crashed off of Australia. Don't ask us how we know. You know, and then eventually they probably figured out a way to tell everybody.
Right. It could
be. I mean, don't you assume the government knows where the plane is? Why would the U.S. government, you know, it's kind of scary if they don't. They can read our emails, but they don't know where the plane was.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Everybody's like, well, they can read a license plate off of, you know, from space, they know where cows are. Yeah, but we still have illegal immigrants coming into the country. We don't know how they're getting in or where they're coming from. So if you can track everything,
I think they probably
you know, everybody
know.
Gives the government. Yeah. Well, they give the government all this, you know, this great power that they know everything, and then they call the government stupid. So, I mean, which is it? It's either one or the other. You can't be all-knowing and all-seeing and then not know. So, I mean, it's got to be – it's somewhere in the middle. Maybe they know that the plane did go down. They may not know exactly where it went down. But, I mean, in the interest of where it was, does the U.S. government really have a stake in that? I mean, it was so far off the coast of anything even owned by the United States that they're – why would they even care? You know, I understand that we had, what was it, three or four people on the plane that were U.S. citizens. Mm-hmm. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, they've done testing on our own citizens.
Yeah, so no. They don't care about the actual people and stuff. I think they just keep an eye on the skies. And they probably would have some inclination of a plane that just crashed. You know? But they wouldn't be able to tell anybody because it's like, why are you watching, you know, off the coast of Australia, you maniacs? So,
but, well, we do have buildings in Australia. So, I mean, that makes some sense. I mean, we have an air base up in Warmera in Australia that is, you know, the U.S. government is a part of. That's, you know, missile range and stuff
way,
like that.
They like, have these like, Google Map, and they have, like, three or four other services like that that people are, like, looking on to try and find the plane. So if they have that for the regular
people. Yeah, but those aren't current to the moment. Something like that. They're not always current up to what's going on. That's why I made a joke about Courtney Love. She said that she found it off of a Google Maps picture. You know, and it's just like squiggly lines in the water. These are oil, and this blotch of color right here, that's wreckage. Could this be the plane? It's like, really? Courtney Love? Seriously? Real? No?
Yeah, but...
For real?
Post-crunch.
I have a feeling that Courtney Love
is
not using the same level of technology that the U.S. government intelligence agencies
I would
are. So it's like... Presumably, if the public has these four-day-old satellite images, then the government probably has much more advanced stuff. That's what I'm saying.
I would imagine they have imaging that's up to the hour at least.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's enough satellites in the sky that they can take things from that I imagine it's our job to know. It's the U.S. It's every government, every world government's job to know. You know, that's kind of what makes them
government.
Yeah, you could
extend that too, like to the Chinese and the Russians and stuff. I'm not just saying, no, it's the American government. It's like, shouldn't the Chinese and the Russians have crazy super satellites that watch all this stuff and know when these things happen?
Well, you'd think
I'm disappointed in the tyranny.
That's a good quote.
Man, I thought we were like in 1984 here, but it turns out we're really in 1994. I don't know.
If you are those countries, do you want to reveal your hand by saying, no, we have this technology and we can track it this far and
exactly.
We can do this and that, you know? And America's like, well, these people are stupid. They don't have that. They do have that technology. Well, you know, if you're a foreign country and you have a technological advantage to find that stuff, do you really want to be giving that information out?
Yeah.
Hmm.
How long was the U-2 flying around before anybody knew it was even up there?
Yeah, really?
You know? I mean, it took one to be shot down.
So
by
all these countries, they're like debating it, you know, whether how to tell people or how to flip the clue in. But that, I'm leaning more towards the idea that it just crashed. But I teased earlier where I kind of made fun of the hypothetical guy. I do hope that it landed somewhere. That seems to be the twisted hope. You hope that some crazy person took it and landed it somewhere. Maybe these people are okay, or you know. But
I have a feeling
even if some
dead.
Crazy person landed
yeah.
in somewhere, 2 weeks later, they're probably all dead.
Yeah.
But
it's actually scarier.
You know.
If somebody did take the plane and land it somewhere, that's a whole bunch of scariness in itself. Because if somebody's got a plane, you know, if somebody has one of these things to be able to do something like, you know, that they've got a delivery method. But on the same token, it's not that hard to buy decommissioned old planes if somebody wanted to do this too. So, you know. It's hard to say. It's an awful lot of work to go through to hijack a plane that, if you have enough resources, you can buy a decommissioned one and do stuff with.
Yeah, for Christ's sake, you can buy
a crazy theory. Here's a crazy theory I just made up. So we'll see if we can get this on CNN next week. What? Maybe the U.S. government, right? Maybe they have sophisticated enough technology where they just sent some rogue plane of their own, right? Like Stealth 2K or whatever, over, and it just picks up the plane, takes it to Area 51. And, like, the other governments watch. They know. They have the satellites, so they see what happened. And they're like, we can't tell everybody that the U.S. government stole the plane and took it back to Area 51. So, now, it was more of a boat.
You just lost me.
From America.
Pretty sure you just lost me.
Hey, dude, based on what we know, it could happen. Could be possible. Based
this
on
is
what
where I stare off
told.
Into space and spit drips out of my mouth.
I cheer for the story, so I'm trying to come up with the most outlandishly awesome thing. Maybe it was, I guess the root of that is maybe it was like, maybe it was just some kind of tactical boast by the United States during all this Ukrainian thing where they're like, yeah, dude, you can invade countries and shit, but we can make a plane disappear. So you really want to fight us, Russia? Because we just made a plane disappear, man. So go take Crimea. We're fine with that. Because
we
we'll
didn't
make
need David Blaine.
Jesus Christ.
Exactly. So we'll keep that in mind. Maybe on another layer, there's some boastfulness going on here.
Really?
Anyway, so tell me about some of these weird... Actually, I'm trying to think if there's anything else to talk about on here. Is it, someone wants to know how much longer you think they'll search for this thing. What do you think, Lobo? Forever?
I give it another week. No, I give it another week. Another story will come up, and people, it'll fall through the cracks. If they haven't found it by now, there'll be some small outlier articles that cover it, but it'll fall through the cracks. It's what always happens. For God's sake.
Yeah, I have a feeling on Monday it's going to be,
well,
on Monday it's going to be
the
like moved to page
Ukraine.
Two.
Yeah. I mean, every
well, we
look,
that
look,
whole
and,
thing.
Look past history. Yeah, exactly. It's lost in the shuffle. You know, something else comes up. It's you know, the flavor of the month, the new hot topic, and it falls through the cracks. It's unfortunate, but that's just, the media, people that watch the media and seriously take it for face value and believe everything they say, they're just interested in the next tragedy. You know, that's all they're interested in. That's, they want to know, you know, who got robbed, you know, what blew up, who's in a war, who, you know, what, and the whole time they're, you know, worried about, you know, starving children in other countries. They don't care about people here. It's just the way it is. It's crap.
Yeah, whenever the next money-making story comes along, that'll be what they latch on to, because that'll be what gets the ratings.
Yep.
You know, or they'll default to politics, you know.
I mean, seriously, how long did Sandy Hook
stay in? I think by Monday we'll start to see it move down. What's that?
Yeah.
How long did Sandy Hook get coverage? I mean, realistically, Sandy Hook got coverage for, what, a month? And then it was, you know, kind of back burner. The Boston Marathon bombings, that got a month, and then it was to the back burner, even with all the conspiracy.
This didn't even happen in America, so it'll...
Exactly.
I think, I think by Monday it'll start to move. I think they've already said that the daily press conferences from the government, Malaysian government, are going to move now to, like, every other day or something. So they're already kind of like, all right, we got a country to run here, so we can't keep looking for this plane.
Shit disappears all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell that to the people that lost loved ones, Lobo.
Well, yeah. You know what? It's again, it's unfortunate, but you know, I mean,
I
for Christ's sake, when
I
was 8 years old, my grandfather shot himself when I was 8 years old. We were sad for a while. Every once in a while, it comes back up, but shit happens. You move on. That's the way life is. It hurts, and it slowly gets dull, more dull as time goes by. But it's still in the back of your mind. You know, the longer you sit on it, the longer it just eats at you. It's the same thing with the stories. You know, yeah, the plane disappeared. Yeah, people lost loved ones. Time heals all wounds.
Yeah, I think they just need closure on what happened to it. You know,
I suppose. I mean, we still don't have closure on Amelia Earhart. So, I mean,
well, that's debatable. That's debatable.
Yeah, that is debatable.
True.
Plus, that was just one lady, so, like 100 years ago. We've moved.
She was a really
years,
important lady, though.
Closure.
Yeah.
Wow. This broad, she's gone.
Well, I don't know.
The worst she got lost. She's a woman flying a plane.
Wow. Wow. Roger. Jesus. I didn't know we were going to work blue tonight. What is this? Don Rickles here with me?
Don Rickles.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Well, tell me about you guys' weird preoccupation with serial killers, because they seem to come up a lot on your program.
Once a year, actually. Year around Thanksgiving. And not Thanksgiving. Well, if we have a niche, I would say it's strange history. We're very fascinated by very odd, strange history, because that stuff, like, well, I can't really speak for Lobo, but for myself, UFOs, ghosts and stuff like that, they're of interest to me, but not real big interest to me, because we don't know really for sure what's out there. That's debatable of who you talk to, of course. Whereas serial killers, weird history, this stuff happened and still does happen. Like, there are serial killers, and that really is terrifying to me because it could be the guy next door or what have you. Lobo is more of a serial killer than I am. I'm more into...
Whoa.
I'm
wow.
Not a serial killer.
Serial killer expert. Let me be specific on that. He's more
wow,
of a serial killer.
Revelations
than I am.
Tonight.
but I'm more into old serial killers like, you know, Bela Kish, Joseph Vacher, you know, all the really old people from history that history kind of forgot about that are just as weird. Whereas Lobo was more of a modern serial killer enthusiast. I don't even want to use that word. But you know, like, well, did we cover Vacher?
No, we haven't. That's one of the, and we shouldn't talk about it because that's going to be that's an ace in the hole.
Well, I can cover. I can at least cover Vacher.
Yeah. All right. There's no information on him.
You want me to cover somebody? I can cover somebody for you if you want to, there, Tim.
Sure, cover somebody.
Okay. Well, there's this guy named Joseph Vacher. He was French. He was known as the French Ripper. Correct me if I'm wrong on this stuff, Lobo, because I'm really going off of memory here.
No, you're right.
I think he killed 11 people from 1894 to 1898, maybe 1897. And he's kind of like he was this guy that, like, he kind of drifted all over the southeast of France. And he was known because he had this big scar on his face. And he was kind of like this Daniel Boone guy. He had a handmade, like, white rabbit hat that he would wear. So he was just this guy meandering along the countryside. And he killed, I think he killed 11 people.
Yeah, it's tentative on his numbers, but that's as close as
they
can get.
11 they could get, because yep. One of them was a woman and 10 of them were teenagers. I think it was a mix of boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
They were mostly shepherds that were out in the countryside. That was how he would go out in the countryside, and he would just sneak up on them and kill them, which is terrifying if you've got kids and you think about that. He would kill them. His modus operandi was he would kill them by stabbing them. He would disembowel them, and then he'd rape them. You know, he'd just do whatever he had to do. But when they caught the guy...
Jesus.
When they caught the guy, he claimed that he was crazy because he was bitten by a dog as a child. So I guess he tried to use the rabies defense or something like that.
He'd have been dead way before that if he had rabies.
Exactly. And then later on he changed the story.
1890s, you say?
Yeah,
I think it was like 1895 to 1898 or 1894 to 1897, somewhere in that range.
It was a brief run.
Yeah, but
in retrospect, it was a brief run.
He later on changed his story to say that he was a messenger from God.
Of course.
And then he was executed by guillotine. Yeah, it had to be around 1897 because he was executed in 1898. I know they had to drag him to the guillotine. They actually had to drag him up there, and then they cut his head off. So, you know, that was one of them. And, you know, those are the kind of people that, because you don't hear about them kind of people anymore, but these are the people in history that these things did happen with. Kish is another really cool one. I won't say he's my favorite, but he's another cool guy. He had a bizarre story behind him, too. So there's the stuff that I think really the old history is the stuff that we're really, really into. Given a chance to talk about old history or have somebody on the show that's really into strange old history, we'll grab them up in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Science or old history is something we really latch on to.
See, he's my
well,
minor
yeah,
more contemporary.
It's a good realm to explore. Forgotten.
I follow the really. More contemporary guys, as Rose
yeah,
said.
Your,
not
yeah,
not
you're,
Wall.
You're,
well, the thing that gets me that it just last week, a gentleman, I'm going to use the term loosely, last name Bergwell. He was also known as Thomas Quick. He's over in Europe, and he was just released. He's the cannibal serial killer. He was released from prison. So he's out walking around the streets.
Yeah, that's right.
He was
yeah.
just released. I can't believe they actually released him, but their laws over there are...
How many people
are,
did he eat?
I believe it was 15. His number
oh,
was
wow.
15, and it wasn't. He didn't just eat them. I mean, he was brutal. He was a serial killer. I mean, he was a bad man. But the fact that he's walking the streets, and I guess he found God or something, that's what his...
How did he get out?
No.
What was the...
He was released.
Yeah,
no,
how did
he
get
released.
Out?
He served his time. He served his time.
For killing 15 people? That's the... You only... You
they don't,
get out
they don't,
of jail for
they don't
that
have,
in Germany?
You got to realize they don't have. I think he's from Sweden, but they don't have laws like we have here. You don't stay in prison for your entire life. You serve your time in Urawa.
Hmm.
You know, they don't have the death sentence. They don't have the things we have. We're considered, you know, behind the times.
I swear there was some kind of a loophole or something he used to get out though.
I don't think so.
Maybe it's the finding God
it
part.
Loophole.
I can't imagine that someone could get convicted of eating 15 people and they wouldn't just change the law.
He's
rehabilitated. Like, you know what, dude? I guess. I guess. That's some weird stuff. You should try and get him on your show.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Would you interview the German cannibal if you could?
I'd like to talk to him, but I wouldn't.
Yeah, I could put it together if you'd like to.
Stir Bergwell. I don't know if he speaks any English. We'd have to have a translator.
We'll get an interpreter.
Yeah, I think we would talk to him. I'd be curious to find out as a way of trying to figure out what's going on inside the guest head or something like that.
Yeah, that's the thing that draws me. I'm fascinated by the human condition.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Look at any of the serial killers within the last 50 years. You look at John Wayne Gacy, you look at Ted Bundy, you look at the Son of Sam, you look at any of them, and they look like anybody. BTK, I mean, he looked like anybody. He was active in his church. He was active with the Scouts. They look like everybody else. They have a really dark
chameleon-like ability.
So dark that they blend in with everybody. You know, that the show Dexter is, everybody's like, well, this isn't going to be realistic. No, you know what? Most serial killers, they look like everybody else. They don't look like the serial killers you see in the movies. That's why American Psycho is such a great horror movie.
Yeah, they wouldn't be successful serial killers if everyone was like, that guy looks like a serial killer.
Well, Ted Bundy was spoken of as a charming man. Gacy was spoken of as a kind and caring gentleman. These are people that are so good at disillusioning people where they fit in. That's the thing I think that disturbs me the most. They have the ability of fitting in so well. That should be the first giveaway. This guy fits in too well. Something's wrong. But you don't see it until after the person's caught or apprehended.
Well, look at H.H. Holmes. I mean, he did how many, and he built a freaking hotel.
Holmes had other things going on. I mean, he was a thief, and he was known for his kind of off the handle behavior at times.
Yeah, he was a straight up vagabond. And he like just take that lady's kids and travel across the country with them while he was murdering. Like he had quite a story. He was a wild man.
Who's that? Holmes?
He did all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Holmes was. I mean, the only guy that was really considered a serial killer that was really, like, you knew the dude was just bad just by looking at him was Albert Fish. He was just a bad dude, you know, or Carl Panzram, too. He was I'm still awesome. He's probably my favorite serial killer was Carl Panzram.
Favorite
dude.
Tell
me about your friend Carl.
Carl Panzram was, he was just a fascinating guy. He bounced around to different homes. Growing up, he was brutalized. He was raped as a child, and he just got to the point where he turned into a monster. He literally turned into a monster, and he started outwardly brutalizing people. I mean, he killed dozens and dozens of people, and his big boast was that he sodomized over 1,000 men and boys. That was his big.
Jesus.
Plain. I mean, when he was getting ready to be hung on the gallows, he told the guy to hurry up, you Hoosier bastard. I could have killed, 10 men in the time it takes you to tie that one knot? He said, I wish the whole world had one neck so that he could put his hands around it and strangle it. The guy was friends with the Birdman of Alcatraz. He actually was friends with the guy.
Okay, so this
Birdman
was like
of Alcatraz.
60s?
No.
When was this?
No, he was. When did he finally die? When was he executed?
I don't remember. We covered him.
Quite a few times. We've used him in quotes, and there's a really good
name?
On Netflix. Carl Panzram. There's a good documentary on Netflix available about Carl Panzram. I every time he comes up, I recommend it highly because it goes behind the man. There was actually a warden, a junior warden that was. Gained his trust because he'd been brutalized in jail by the wardens and the guards. And this guy gained his trust, and he actually wrote like a diary of sorts of everything Panzram did. Panzram told him his whole life story, and this dude wrote it down, or he had Carl wrote it. He'd sneak paper in and a pencil, and Carl would write. If we didn't know, if this guy didn't bring this paper in, he would have just drifted away into obscurity. But he didn't. And then when the Birdman wrote his book, his memoirs, he spoke of Carl Panzram as well. So, I mean, the dude was – he just fascinates me. The guy just fascinates me.
See, that's why this stuff is frightening, because these people are real. These people are out in the street walking around. UFOs and aliens and things like that, they exist kind of in this world aether or other world thing. These people are out there. They could be your neighbors. They could be anywhere. So, you know, you don't walk down the street thinking, oh, I'm going to get abducted by aliens tonight. But there is a possibility the serial killer could kill you.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, that
yeah.
stuff is – that's the stuff that's really frightening when it comes down to it. That's the stuff that hits people. When you hear about these people and these things, it hits you in a nerve. Yeah, 1930, you're right.
September 5th, 1930, that's when he died.
Yeah, 1930, yeah. I was just going to say that, yeah. Weird stuff. No, I agree with you. It's the same, kind of connects earlier to the missing plane. It's like weird things that actually have happened and could happen that we know for sure, you know.
Yeah.
Like, well, I think now everybody gets on a plane is going to be like, oh, I hope it doesn't disappear like that Malaysian, you know. And it's
well,
same
hell,
kind of
when
thing
I was coming back from Mexico
killer.
Last year, a plane almost crashed with me on it, you know. I literally was almost in a plane crash when I was coming back last year from Mexico. So, you know, and I'd get on another plane and fly again. Actually, I did. I ended up flying like a month later back to the same place again.
Nope.
So, yeah, really, nope.
Nope.
Jesus.
But,
well, know, what is it about the alternative science you like? I know that you are good friends with my good friend, Tyler Cokejohn. We're kind of all in the same circle here. So talk a little bit, because he's been on your show a million times. So talk about him. He's been on BOA Audio just once, but he'll be back. But he's been on you guys' show a lot. So he's sort of like your science advisor, let's say. So tell me about the insights that Tyler has provided you guys over the years.
There's a reason. Well, Tyler will come on and talk about – he'll talk about science as well as paranormal. He's really good at taking sciencey stuff and putting it into terms where the layman, the everyday person, can hear it and go, oh, okay, I know what this guy's talking about. He's very knowledgeable. He's very easygoing. He's somebody that we can just call up and shoot an idea at him. He'll say yeah, or, you know, say yeah or nay, or he's willing to come on and talk about the stuff with us. So he's always, you know, we have a really hard time getting scientists on our show. A, because they look at our site, and a lot of them have said, you know what, I see on here that you've talked about Bigfoot and werewolves, and you've talked about all these things. And it's like, yeah, but we've also talked about all this stuff, too. You know, we do talk about things of a skeptical nature a lot. But a lot of them, they just don't want to do that. Or they're off doing sciencey things. That's why they became scientists. Tyler, who I'm pretty sure is probably out there listening right now, who needs to get off his ass and create his own blog.
absolutely. Actually, yeah, I've been telling him the same thing.
He's the guy's one of the foremost researchers on Alzheimer's disease, and he spends his day trolling us on Twitter. But, no, but he's just somebody we can throw ideas at him, and he's got practical, real intelligent, easygoing stuff to say about it. We could have him on to talk about UFOs and his experiences, as well as talking about gene research, germ warfare, all of these different things. He's real good at putting gloom and doom out there.
Yeah, he is.
But he's really knowledgeable and really easy approach and easy to talk to, and he's got a very open mind. He's not closed off to the idea that people are seeing UFOs or people are having experiences. He's not somebody that says we should discount this and write it all off. He's willing to look into the stuff and research it. But at the same time, he could just as easily talk about science, pure hard science stuff, in an easy to understand way. So, you know, it's one of the reasons he comes on a lot is because he makes himself accessible to us, and he always gives us an open ear. And he gets what we do. Another one of our rules on the show is we always take what we're talking about very seriously. We don't take ourselves serious by any means, but the topics that we cover, those do get taken care of seriously, and they do get talked about appropriately. So we can go on and be knuckleheads, but when we're talking about germ warfare and all of these different things, we mean what we're talking about. We're very, very interested in this stuff. And Tyler gets that, and that's one of the reasons he comes on a lot. Like we were talking about the cloning of the mammoths and stuff like that. And he can come on and put that stuff in practical terms where people can understand and say, yes, we're doing this, but this could happen, and should we be doing this? I'm of the opinion, yes, let's clone, you know, mammoths and things like that.
Yeah.
Let's clone silence. Let's do this stuff. And he says, well, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Yes, it's okay to ask those questions, and we should be asking those questions, but we're going to do it anyways. Once the Pandora's box has been opened and once people know that we can do these kinds of things, it's going to get done. The important thing is that we are asking these questions. Should we do this? As long as that stuff is in the back of our mind, you know, I think we'll be okay. It's like when we created the atomic bomb. Should we create the atomic bomb? We could destroy the world with these kinds of things. And, of course, we made more and we did more and things like that. We have yet to blow ourselves up because we know the destructive potential that we have. So, you know, that's my attitude about it. Tyler is also very good about giving neutral opinions and things like that as well. Well, you've talked to the guy. I mean, it's funny because the guy, he doesn't have any books, doesn't have a podcast, doesn't have a blog. He's not selling anything. He's putting himself out there to talk about all these esoteric and strange issues. You know, he has a reputation to be thoughtful. There were a lot of scientists who are like, I can't go on and talk about this stuff. And he does, and he's willing to do it. And that's
yeah, I think
really
he has
cool.
tenure, so he's a little safer than a lot of other scientists. But
well, even still, a lot of scientists get real huffy about that kind of stuff, where they become the very hardcore skeptic along those lines.
Mm.
Science is it's kind of like religion. You have your hard science and you have your hard religion. And as far as beliefs about paranormal religion and stuff, I think we tend to kind of fall in the middle or as much in the middle about this stuff as we possibly can. And he gets that, and that's why we like having him on. Plus, he's got he's got fans. You know, we say, hey, Tyler's coming on our show. Those episodes are almost always the most downloaded episodes because when he comes on, we always have interesting, great conversations and topics with the guy. So he's on point, you know.
No, he's solid. He's a good guy. I'm glad you guys give him a platform.
Yeah,
Lobo, say
something. Do more.
Something.
Oh, boy.
Tyler and I have an interesting relationship. I've always been a science-based individual. I love science. It's just, I don't want to say it's a religion, because for me, it's not. But Tyler's a gigantic brain, and I just want to get in that brain. I want to know how it ticks. I want to know how it works. And every time I speak to him or we chat back and forth on text or email or on Twitter, I get a little more of that insight. A little more of that insight into how Tyler works. He fascinates me.
I think we'd be like that with any scientist that we know. If we knew more scientists, we'd be like that with all of them, though.
Yeah, well, it's not, you know, it's not just Tyler. I mean, like when Ben Radford's on, I want to know what's going on inside his head. Because Ben fascinates me as well. You know, when I'm on Skype with Sater, I want to get inside his head. Because he just interests me. There's certain people that just, like when you call me at work, Tim, I want to know what's going on inside your skull. You know,
I'm starting to think Lobo is a serial killer. This you don't want to you don't want to wear.
He's a very analytical person.
What's that?
You don't want to wear.
No, I don't want to open.
Right.
No, I don't want to open your skull up. I don't want to do that.
Not anymore, at least.
No.
Okay. So.
Well,
if
you're within driving distance,
I
don't need that kind of trouble.
You're only an hour and 15 minutes away from me. Well, no, it's when I'd listened to BOA for the longest time, and then we got to be friends, and I consider you a friend. And
yeah, I'll say you're a friend.
When you call, I look forward to it, because when the phone rings, like, oh, it's Tim, and I know I'm going to have a good conversation. It's like when roll calls. You know, I know I'm going to have a good conversation, even if it's only about whether or not soda or pop. It's still a good conversation.
Oh, God.
You know, we're randomly talking about bananas.
Well, I guess,
you know,
so. Of the two, I'd have to say it's soda. Everyone knows that.
Well, you're out here in New England with me, so.
God, you bastards.
You're a
That's
pop fan?
That's an ongoing battle.
I'm from Michigan. We call it pop up here. We don't call it soda. We call it pop. Red pop, you know.
Probably
we just call it pop. Maybe it is. I don't know. I never paid attention when I was in Canada. It's one of those things. So I know everybody to the south calls it. I think down in Florida they still call it pop, though. It's a weird. Actually, somebody posted a chart on Facebook about what it was called by region.
Yeah, if either called
something.
Yeah,
like
I've seen
pop
that.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called. That's what I hate it. When I go into a restaurant, they'll be like, "What kind of? What do you want to drink?" I'll be like, "What do you got?" We got Orange Coke, Sprite Coke, Diet Coke,
what?
Root Beer Coke.
They call it Orange Coke. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Want a Coke? Yeah. When I was down in North Carolina, I made the mistake of saying I wanted a Coke. And the woman just stared at me. What kind? I'm like, I want Coke. I want the dark brown stuff that burns when you drink it. You know? That's
yeah,
what I want.
Coke.
Yeah.
She's like, root beer Coke?
I want the white.
Like, what? No, yeah, like if beer. I wanted root beer, I'd say root beer. Oh, God.
I'm probably pissing off all the Southern.
Quick announcement for two of Greendale's finest. Payday is postponed until next week, so this is my freestyle rap apology.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Well, I'm a peanut bar, and I'm here to say your checks will arrive on another day. Another day, another dime, another rhyme, another dollar. Another stuffed shirt with another white collar. Criminals, Wall Street, taking the pie, and all the black man gets is a plate of white lies. Prisons recruiting them, police be shooting them. Rap artists looting them, labels all diluting them. Barack Obama is scared of me, because I don't swallow knowledge, and I spit it for free. Let me clear my throat. Ha, ha, ha. I don't know what that was. I don't know what that was.